Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for your service. Nikki S., I am a grateful overeater, binge restrictor, sugar addict in recovery. I'd like to just take a moment to start with a prayer. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know so that I can have an open mind and a new experience. Please show me the truth. Amen. So how did I get here? It's a long story. I'm 50. I came through the doors of OA 25 years ago the first time. And at that time, I thought I was being honest, and I was desperate. I was sufficiently desperate. But what I didn't realize is that I was still relating to the world around me as right, wrong. And I was wrong and everything else was right. And so when I walked through the doors of OA, I thought, well, this must be right. And I must be really wrong. And even when I walked through and I did my steps 4 and 5, I did 4. It took me months and months to do it. But I did it from the vantage point of what was wrong with me. All the things that were wrong with me. So it wasn't a matter of looking at character defects. I didn't understand the concept yet. I could only think of what was wrong with me. Everything that I had done that was wrong. Everything about me that was wrong. All the things that I hated about myself. But I didn't understand that there was no concept of allowing God in there, because God would have shown me it's not a matter of right, wrong. It's just a matter of what's showing up. So that's separating you and me. What's showing up that's separating you and me? So going back to my childhood, the loathing starts there. It starts at a very, very young age. I wouldn't know that that was the word loathing at the time, but I felt separate and I felt other and I felt bad all the time. And I was really, really lonely. I came from a family of addicts, third generation that I know of. I say that I know of because I suspect there's more in the lineage, but it was a very volatile household. It was a scary household. It wasn't a place that a kid felt safe. There was physical abuse. There was emotional abuse. From the time that I can remember, I was told that I was disgusting. You're disgusting. That's disgusting. What I liked was disgusting. How I looked was disgusting. Everything about my body and my appearance became everybody else's property. Everybody had the right to comment. Everybody had the right to restrict my food, increase my food, change my food, do things with my food. But all I ever wanted was to be loved. I just wanted to be accepted. I just wanted to be loved. I just wanted to be held. I wanted to be understood. I wanted to belong. And I belonged to this crazy family. And everyone knew us as the crazy family. And everywhere we went, it was, there's that crazy family. As you know, is the dad going to pop off and go crazy? Is the mom going to withhold? Is she going to do with the kids or, you know, this, that? And I just tried so hard to be perfect. It was a never ending loop of trying to be perfect, trying to be better, trying to be something, anything. Someone notice me, please. Someone noticed me. I'm aching. I cry myself to sleep most nights. I started with food behaviors when I was really, really little. My first memory is about 3. And I remember this pantry that we had. And I would now use the word compulsion. At 3, I didn't have that language, but I just knew that what was in that cupboard had to go in my face because I knew it was going to help. I don't know why, but I did. So that's what I did. I started sneaking, doing things. Then the lying starts because mom finds out that you're taking food that you're not supposed to have. Mom doesn't like that. Uh-oh. Now I'm in a conflict because I want to do things to try to please my mother, but I can't stop putting the food in my face. I don't know what to do. We'd go to family gatherings. We'd go to functions. I come from a large Jewish family and there was holidays and extended family and this and that. And so every function was like 25 people plus. So there's a lot of food around. And these foods would come into the house when they weren't normally there. perfect opportunity for someone like me to skim, try to get those foods, try to get that stuff in, because I didn't know what to do. I felt out of place. Most times, my father would silence the room and everyone would be eating and he would scream, "Stop eating!" What do you do? I would freeze and the sucking hole in my chest would start. And I think, I don't know what to do with the food that's already in my mouth. So I swallowed. And then I would go and throw up. And then I would find other food. And then I'd start hiding food in my underpants. And then I'd start hiding food in tissues and places and different places throughout the house so I could come back to it later. And this behaviors, they grew and they became really, really unmanageable. But I only had access to things at different times. So I'm still young. I got put on my first diet when I was 6 years old. And I remember the nutritionist and my mother shaming me. Shame and guilt were used as tools in my family. Shame and punishment and humiliation. And I stood on the scale and they just shamed me. And at 6 years old, what am I supposed to do? These people were my gods. I didn't know different. I didn't have anything different. So I did what they said to do. And I ate the disgusting food. And I ate the powders and the potions and the this and the that. And I didn't want any of it. And I had to sit in the corner, separate from everyone else, and eat those foods because I was being punished, because I was fat and disgusting. And there was so much loathing. And I thought, what did I ever do to anybody? I could never figure out what I did. I could never figure out what went wrong or how I did this or how I did that or what happened here, what happened there. And every week I'd go and I'd stand on the scale for the nutritionist and more potions and powders and disgusting things would come home. It wasn't real food. It was gross. And every week, somehow I gained weight, but I wasn't sneaking. I would be called a sneak and a liar and a thief and a this and a glutton. And it was name after name after name. And I'm not paying for this for you to X, Y, Z. That was a phrase I heard a lot growing up. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was following this. I was eating this. So then we stopped going to the nutritionist. And from there, it was diet after diet after diet. It was crying myself to sleep. It was sneaking food. It was getting to the point where I was so desperate for love and affection that I would wake up in the middle of the night and go into the cupboards and just try to skim the smallest amount so that maybe she wouldn't notice. Here's what I didn't know. My mother was an obese child. I did not find out that my mother was an obese child until I was in my 30s and I was helping my grandmother clean out something in her apartment. I said, "Who is that?" She said, "That's your mother." I said, "Huh?" I had no idea that my mother had such problems with food. I had no idea that when my mother was locking things up, and they would, my parents would buy elaborate foods and spreads and lock them all up, and my mother would hide the key. God help me, I found that key one day. That was not a good scene. So the volatility continued, the violence continued, the shame continued, and then I developed very early, and I had quite a large chest and quite a curvy body, and everyone was looking at me, and that was bad. I was told that was bad. I was told that was my fault. People made fun of me. People did other things. Boys at school made fun of me. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't really have my first friend until I was 11. So I spent a lot of time alone and a lot of time in my head and a lot of time feeling really sad, but not knowing where to go. And there was one auntie in my family who was just an amazing human being, still is, God bless her. And she would come and whisk me away to her house, which was a couple hours away. And I would spend time there with my auntie and uncle. And I felt loved and I felt cared for. And wouldn't you know, I didn't participate in food behaviors, even though she had open bowls of candy on the table. I felt loved and I felt cared for, but I didn't put this together until I would go back home. And then there would be so much anxiety and so much like, so much fear. What's going to happen next?
That was 10 minutes.
Thanks, Damien. So what happens next is my father unexpectedly dies when I'm 16. And the cycles often continued and everything was pretty bad. And my father, despite all of his addiction and all of his woes and all of his volatility, he was still my world. He spoke my love language. My father, when he had his calm moments, he was the one who had the love. He was the one who had the hugs. He was the one who had the time for me. So he dies, and now the disease goes crazy. And I mean crazy because I had a car and I had money and I had the opportunity to start binging in a whole new way. And this whole time that I'm participating in this behavior, all these many years, I still think I'm the only one in the world who does this. I have no idea. So now I'm going through drive-throughs. I'm ordering for families, but I'm eating it all myself. I'm eating myself to sleep, waking up and eating again. I'm eating to capacity and throwing up and then making more room and then eating more. I gained 50 pounds the month after he died. No one's noticing. And I keep saying, I need help. I need help. I need help. And what I'm met with, you're disgusting. Go help yourself. But I don't know I have a disease. So cut to at 18, I moved to Canada, not because I wanted to, because I moved to Canada. I grew up in Los Angeles. And I meet a guy. And this guy, I think, oh, well, he must be my person because he's the only one who's interested in me. I stayed with that guy from 18 to 42. Talk about making choices in the disease. Not an awesome choice. Not an awesome choice. There was, everyone says, be careful, don't marry your father. I married my mother. Not an awesome choice. There was a lot of abuse, a lot of emotional abuse, a lot of withholding, a lot of game playing. He's also a sick person. So that continued. And over the course of that marriage, I gained 250 pounds. I ate my way through that marriage. Over the course of that marriage, I got myself in about $200,000 worth of debt because if I wasn't dieting, I was shopping. If I wasn't shopping, I was eating. If I wasn't eating, I was dieting. And so it went. And the disease went crazy. Somewhere in my mid-20s is when I discover OA the first time because things are so out of control, I don't know what to do. And I think, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And I walk through the doors and I get an idea. Well, these people must have something. I stayed there for about a year and then I started to get super judgy. I got super, super judgy because there were a lot of people in the room that were still heavy. And I'm like, hey, if you're working this program, what's your deal? And I left. It was any excuse to leave. So the behavior gets riskier and riskier. I end up going through all kinds of pain and trauma, physical pain, car accidents, recoveries, all kinds of stuff, jobs, this, that, the next thing. And meanwhile, I have two kids. There's miscarriages in between. There's all kinds of stuff that happens and heartache. And both my kids have challenges. And the violence in my home continues. It's not anything anybody expects. My youngest child for sure would behave if they could, but they can't. They have challenges. That's just how it is. And that's just how God shows up in my life and said, hey, this is what's happening. These kids need this mother. And there you go. And so very painfully, 3 years ago, I ended up having to make the decision to put this youngest child in care. And I made it through for a good year. Before I start the binge again, I would have pockets in these last long periods of time and have pockets of reinventing myself, reinventing my career, starting a new relationship, trying different things. And I would have these pockets of what we would call abstinence, not participating in compulsive behaviors and compulsive food behaviors. And then it would be one emotional thing that would tip the scale, and that was it. So what brought me to the doors, eight months before I came to OA this time, I was an 8 month long binge. Started out with just a little bit of sugar, just a little bit. And then it was like a little bit more, a little bit more. Then it was a little bit more food, a little bit more here, a little bit more there. And then it started to get really risky. Started to get like...
That was five more minutes.
Thanks, Damien. It started to get really risky because it's during COVID. I can't get away from my family to get the next hit. And I'm getting pissed off. I can't get away from these people so that I can get what I feel I need. And I'm mad and I'm getting snarky and I'm starting to like take things, do things, order extra food, skimming off other people's food. There are all kinds of food behaviors that I participated in. So this month, 8 month long binge, I start talking to my counselor and I say, oh, you know, I'm really keeping a secret from my partner. And it's just, we said no secrets. We said we wouldn't have secrets. And here we are. What am I doing? I'm literally stuffing my face. I'm hiding stuff in the closet. I'm hiding stuff in my bra, in my underpants. I'm praying to God the guy doesn't touch me or even want to get intimate because he's going to find food on my body and he's going to know I've been lying to him. I would put stuff in the trash. I go back and get it. I do put stuff over here. I go and get it. I would buy extra things. I'd eat it as quickly as I could on the way home. And I think, oh my God. And it got to the point where I thought, God, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die tonight. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I know it. I'm going to die. And I would go to bed and I'd say, please, please, please don't let me die. And then I would wake up in the morning and I go, oh God, but I'm still here. Now what do I do? And I couldn't stop binging. I finally said to my partner, I couldn't talk to him. I couldn't look him in the eye. And I texted him and I said, I have to tell you something. I have to tell you something because I've been lying to you. And I said we would have no secrets and you said we would have no secrets and I need help. And I really need to go to this program and I have to tell you what I've been doing. And I came clean. A week before that happened, I had contacted, at the time at OA Footsteps, you could go and you could like read sponsors. And I was like dabbling in it. And I'd be like reading profile. You know, yeah, no. And I'd read another profile. No. And then I reached out to someone. They didn't message me back. And I was like, see, see. This time after I spoke to my partner, I reached out. The person answered immediately. And then the person said, hey, I'm free for a phone call. And I went, huh? What? And I phoned before I couldn't. And then that person brought me to this meeting. And I've been abstinent ever since. So today, what's different? I put the food down. I put the food down. I picked up the big book. I got on my knees. And I said, okay, God, I'm willing. I'm willing. I'm terrified. I'm absolutely terrified. And I don't know what I'm agreeing to because you can't know the totality of what is in this amazing book until you go through it step by step. You can't understand what's going to happen at step 12 when you're only at the point of being willing. You can't know that. You can't even know what's going to happen at step 4 until you get there. So today, my abstinence, when it started a year ago, my abstinence was, okay, I put the food down. I got a meal plan. That's how it started. And then, okay, I'm going to start talking to God. Okay, I'm willing to admit that something greater than me is out there because it is, because something has to be. Then meal plan, then God, then meetings, then reading the big book, then working the steps, then a gratitude list, then daily meditation. Then I, you know, read the promises. I sponsor, I work with outreach, and I'm like, but it didn't start there. It started with willingness. That's all I had. I didn't know what else to do. and my life today is nothing short of a miracle. I cannot believe what happens when there is no statute of limitations on cleaning up your side of the street.
One more minute.
Thank you, Damien. It is absolutely breathtakingly phenomenal to wake up each day and go, I'm here for a new day. To look in the mirror and not be a liar. I don't walk in the dark bathroom anymore because I didn't want to see myself. I look in the mirror and I say, hey, today, it's okay, today. I don't look at tomorrow. I spend a lot of time in tomorrow and yesterday in regret and not a lot of time today. I have relationships with people that I didn't know that I could have because I was willing to say, I'm sorry. I really hurt you. I was absent. How can I make it up? What does it look like now? What would you like? You know, I'm starting to learn active listening. I'm starting to connect with people in all kinds of ways. It's showing up in my business. It's showing up at home. It's showing up in my life. It's showing up on the scale. Funnily enough, that's the smallest part of all of this to me. I was desperate to get this weight off. I'm still over 300 pounds, but I'm not 500 pounds anymore. And it's going to come when it's going to come. But today, what I have, going to bed in peace, waking up in peace, having a sense of serenity and love and belonging in these rooms that I had longed for my whole life. It's all right here. Everybody that's looking at me, the love, the outreach, the support, the connection, it really is the weakness that binds us. It's not the strength. No amount of willpower could change this. God knows I had willpower and a cusp of despair. That was never my issue. But it wasn't going to change this. Only God would change this. And today, for that, I'm grateful.